As part of NAPT's mission of sharing Native stories with the world, multimedia intern Blue Tarpolici talks with NAPT's executive director, Shirley Snavey, and assistant director, Georgiana Lee, about the NAPT program fund and additional resources for producers.
Can I get you to introduce yourselves, starting with Shirley?
I'm Shirley Snavey. I'm a member of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe. I'm the executive director of Native American Public Telecommunications.
I'm Georgiana Lee. I'm the assistant director for Native American Public Telecommunications, and I'm from the Navajo Tribe.
Okay, so we're just going to jump right into it. NAPT does a lot of funding, and they provide other resources for media makers. Can you tell me a little bit about the difference between acquisitions versus program funding?
Well, the program funding we offer once a year, it's an open call that producers can apply to for research and development or production completion funding. The acquisition program, it's actually finished program acquisition program. That's a year-round open call for producers if they want to submit programs that are finished. I think it's to their advantage to actually apply when they're wanting completion funding for their programs, because then we're able to step in and it's a little bit more flexible for them to be able to deliver successfully to PBS because they're at the tail end of post-production.
So to jump back, who actually decides who is going to be funded?
We have a panel that we convene because George and I have experience. We know what's out there, but it always helps to have that be a joint decision. I mean, this is not unlike how anybody chooses programs through a panel process, the National Endowment for the Arts, you know, Humanities, even the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, POV, ITVS, everybody uses a panel process. So we have about 5 experts in various fields related to public broadcasting and Native American studies. So generally what a panel would look like is a couple of programmers from a PBS station, maybe a curator of a film festival, a Native American history professor, or we always try to get a filmmaker. So it looks like generally, I like to say 2 white guys and 3 Indians, so that there's a varied opinion and people well-versed in their culture, and they know what kind of stories they want to tell and what's true and authentic. And then the PBS guys will be able to tell the panel whether or not it's going to make it on PBS, if it's that kind of program that a PBS audience would be interested in.
Okay, so George, it sounds like you guys will get the proposals and then hand it off to the panel, but that's not the end of your relationship with the proposals. You guys provide feedback and...
Yeah, we actually take notes throughout the entire process so that producers can call our office. I'm more than happy to schedule time over the phone with producers to go over the notes that the panelists had offered. In fact, I think that's essential to do because if you're planning on growing your program over the next year and reapplying, then you need those notes. You need to know exactly what needs to be updated in your proposal. Anywhere from looking for a new Native team member to taking a look at the structure of your program again. I'm more than happy to do that. But also before that, I do want to say that we do encourage producers to contact us as well to give us updates between the deadline of the proposal when they submitted the program to our open call and up until the point where the panelists convene, because it's important for us to fill in the holes there. I had a lot of producers call me this year and update me on the program, and I was able to go to the panel and let them know, you know, well, this is actually an update that I received, and it may have addressed a concern that someone may have had on the panel and may have came to the meeting with that concern. So it's really helpful for people to communicate with us.
You talked about some of the things that the panel might be concerned about. And one thing that I saw that you guys have as a stipulation is that you do not completely fund programs. So what kind of resources, I suppose, does NAPT put media makers in touch with as far as fundraising? Do you guys have a network of fundraisers?
When they come to us for funding, we ask them for a fundraising plan. And it's nice if they have a little money in the bank before they apply, but we don't mind being first money in because that's really a vote of confidence, you know, from their Native communities that this Native organization has said yes to their film. We want to help them fundraise as much as they can through letters of support to introduction to funders, helping them draft new proposals, knowing in advance what the other funders are looking for. ITVS is the number one choice for people to go to, probably followed by Ford and MacArthur. And it's hard. It's very hard and it's very competitive. We provide a book when we fund projects on how to fundraise for your film. So yeah, we really want to help them do that.
3 things I'd like to offer is... 1, I would encourage producers to do a little bit of research before they apply to our funding because, yeah, we like to be first money in, but we also like to know that there are other funders that they're looking at for funding. That's a question in our application as far as secured funding to date as well as potential funding. Don't leave it blank. Secondly, is we have a producer e-newsletter that you can sign up for. It's free. You can go to our website, nativetelecom.org, and sign up for the producer newsletter. There's tons of opportunities in there, from funding opportunities to training opportunities. And there's also meetings that come up where they can actually workshop their program and they can get some essential feedback from people in the industry. So that's fantastic. The third point I do want to make is that, you know, this is my putting on my producer hat here. You don't want to get as much funding as you can for a program from one source, and especially that being NAPT. And the reason why I say that is because we are funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So there are contract requirements that we have and that we cannot be flexible about. And one of those requirements is that we have to have a certain percentage of net proceeds from producers. So keep in mind that the larger the funding toward your budget, I guess the amount of funding that we're putting toward your program, keep that into consideration because your percentage is going to go up.
Which means that you're talking about royalties and ancillary income. And I think that's really an important point. The investment that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting puts in, so there's a percentage of the income that is made off of that program that feeds back to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, that they in turn feed back to NAPT so that we can further fund more programs.
So that kind of addresses one concern that media makers have is the delivery of the program is so specific. And it's because it's not a grant, it's a contract.
It's a contract. Yeah, definitely.
I was going to add also that, you know, one thing that we did this year was we saw so much potential in many media makers that applied to this year's open call. Granted, they didn't get recommended for funding, but we absolutely felt the need to hook them up with the right people so that they can receive the training that they need to be able to deliver a high quality program to PBS. So that's something that we also do is we try to network them with the right people in the industry.
Yeah, that was my follow-up question. You've got a lot of resources for those producers that are funded, but it looks like you guys are taking steps to make sure that even the producers that aren't funded have resources too.
Oh, absolutely. We have a website. It has a login process so that you can create an account on there and identify yourself as a media maker. You can also identify yourself as a student or an educator. The advantage to that is that you are able to network with others. And if you need a team of native filmmakers, you can actually search media makers that are within a certain radius of where you are looking for talent. I would encourage everyone to go on, create a profile, put your resume on there. You can actually upload your resume as well as sample videos that you've done in the past to give an idea of what kind of work you can do.
And the regional thing on that is great, too, because we've had things like PBS programs saying that they're coming to, well, let's say South Dakota. We can tell them from the database, well, these people are available to work on your projects. So we've been able to offer employment through that database to quite a few filmmakers over the years since we've had it for a couple of years now, had that up and running. There's about 250 people that have identified themselves as filmmakers in there. The ability to share rough cuts with each other is, I think, a great service that we can offer.
When talking about the online resources that you guys have, the producer handbook is huge as a resource, but it's also a little daunting. What plans do you see NAPT doing in the future for the producer handbook?
You know, you're right in that it is huge. It is daunting. One thing that we did this year was we split it up into sections. It's so much easier for producers to go to the handbook now and to be able to identify, you know, where they're at in the process. If they're in post-production, they can go to this certain section on credit requirements. One thing we did as well is we're starting to put those sections out there in our producer e-newsletter. Just giving you a little bit to chew on. It's not too much to the point where it's going to take you 30 minutes to read through the whole thing. It'll take you maybe 5 to 10 minutes to read through it. And it's just food for thought.
You know, it's a good resource. Like there's release forms, all sorts of forms that you need to be aware of to clear all the rights, the music cue sheets and everything to be able to deliver your program.
Yeah, I've actually had calls with experienced producers in the PBS system that actually like our handbook because there are some contracts in there. There's some releases that are helpful.
All right. You've got some great resources on the website that we've already talked about. But do you want to talk about maybe anything about social media? Do you have any plans for your social media in the near future?
Okay. One thing I do want to say about social media is I think that it's important to use that early on in the process. I think that there's some producers out there that don't look at it as a process throughout the entire film. They look at it more as promotional. So therefore, you know, a lot more essential during the broadcast or the distribution attribution of the title, but it's absolutely essential for fundraising especially. I would encourage all producers to get a Facebook page, develop your Twitter account, all that good stuff. Check out our website. There's actually a PowerPoint that was developed by Eric Martin, who is our interactive media specialist, and he really does lay out all these different media platforms that you should engage for your program. I do want to say that I would encourage everyone to update your audience throughout the process so that they are familiar with the growth of your program throughout the point where you're fundraising and you're letting your funders know what's going on with the program.
Documentary filmmakers do this not to get rich. They do this because they have a story that they want to share. They want to make a difference, and that's why they choose the theme and they research and they shoot and they produce the film. Making money on it is good. I mean, because it helps get the message out there, and then you're able to start funding your next documentary project. And so using social media platforms right away to start cultivating that audience. What is it that you want this documentary to do? I mean, how do you see this making a difference in your life and other people's lives and in your tribe's life? And you do that by starting to craft the story and sharing that story so that when the film is released, you've already got an audience.
That was Blue Tarpalici's interview with Shirley Snavy and Georgiana Lee. Snavy has served as NAPT's executive director since 2004. Before that, she was director for the Washington Pavilion of Arts and Science Visual Arts Center. Georgiana Lee joined NAPT in 2009. She manages NAPT's programs created for PBS and works with independent Native American producers. She serves on the board of the National Alliance for Media Art and Culture. Support for this program comes in part from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. CPB's mission is to facilitate the development of and ensure universal access to non-commercial high-quality programming and telecommunications services on the web at cpb.org.